Voices of VR Podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR Podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from MetaConnect 2024, today's episode is with Tipitat Srinivasan, who's a general partner and co-founder of the Virtual Reality Fund. So Tipitat was super excited around Garcia, which is an application that he's invested in that is showing these Gaussian splats. And so being able to take a number of different photos and then rendering out these objects, which were essentially in this black void, is a little bit different than what I saw with the Hyperscape demo, which was much more like complete full scenes, which required like cloud rendering on the back end. These were a little bit more simpler, where you could start to render out these discrete individual objects. Tipitat is fond of calling these Gaussian splats as sort of like the JPEG of immersive content, and could have a lot of potentials for how these Gaussian splats eventually lead into creating trained large language models, and from there feeding into new forms of generative AI that are able to get much more higher levels of photorealism. And so we also talk about some of the general news that were coming out of MetaConnect and some of the other highlights of different experiences that were really catching his attention. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR Podcast. So this interview with Tipitat happened on Thursday, September 26th, 2024 at MetaConnect in Menlo Park, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, I'm Tipitat Srinivasan. I'm general partner, co-founder of the Venture Reality Fund. We are a VC firm that specializes in investing in early stage VR, AR, AI startups.
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
So I actually started as a developer, started in the industry as like a 3D artist, worked my way through different jobs, became a prototyper, designer, creative director, technical art director, eventually had my own mobile game startup, but then I backed the Oculus on Kickstarter, was blown away thinking finally consumer VR is going to be in my lifetime, it's going to happen. I started making some really simple demos, accidentally cured myself of my real life fear of heights with a demo I created with my friend Eric and John, and that really got me all in the XR space. I ended up joining a fund, becoming one of the first investors focused only on the XR space, then was able to start my own fund, the Venture Reality Fund, with my partner Marco. And so now we've done nearly 60 investments in the past 10 years of investing in this space.
Great. Well, we're here at MetaConnect 2024, and you just showed me a demo of Gaussian splats, and you have like a lot of passion. You said the thing that you're most excited about right now in XR is Gaussian splats. So why Gaussian splats and why are you so excited about them?
Sure. Yeah, so I just showed you a demo from the technology of one of our portfolio companies called Gracia. They're really working on a Gaussian splat viewer for VR and AR. They already have a demo in the Meta Store. You can download Gracia VR, and they'll show some amazing still splats that I just showed you. Some of my food scans are included in there. What really amazes me, impresses me about Gaussian splats, especially with my background as a 3D artist, one of the biggest problems for VR is creating content, and especially real high-quality 6DoF 3D content. And so, especially if we want photorealism, a lot of times right now people are doing things like 360 or 180 video and 180 stereo video. And it's compelling, but it's still 3DoF at the end of the day. And to get full presence all the time, what really makes VR stand out is that when it hits your lizard brain and you realize you're not staring at an image, but you actually believe the object is in front of you, that's when VR is at its most powerful, or AR is at its most powerful. And so we've been missing this critical link. This is the missing link. This is the holy grail of VR content, where now, I like to say it's the JPEG or PNG of VR, where now you can have something look photorealistic and you can have complete 6 degrees of freedom looking around it. And that's so important. And it's very inexpensive, relatively inexpensive to capture and produce. And now with Garcia, very easy to play back in an XR headset.
Yeah, and that first day that I was here, back on Tuesday, during the demo day for press and creators, they had demos of Hyperscape, which they released as an app, but you have to have cloud rendering of the scenes. And so I had a chance to see it, and I really appreciated the level of detail for the scans that they had. But in order to do the processing, they were forced to do the cloud rendering, mostly because when there's different elements of translucence with multiple layers, then it basically becomes too heavy for an individual GPU to be able to do that. So that was an entire scene that was very complex. And what you just showed me was more like object-based, like one object that you're able to see in front of you in this kind of black void, rather than being fully immersed within the whole environmental context. But what you're showing me is able to be rendered out on the headset, whereas most of the stuff that I saw before was doing like cloud rendering. So maybe you could just describe a little bit of like the limits of how, like, would you be able to run as complex of a large scene rendered on the headset, or is it really isolated to these small discrete objects right now?
Sure. The Hyperscape demo is pretty awesome. I definitely recommend anyone in the US that has a really good internet connection to try it. I think what you'll see though is, again, at its core, what a Gaussian splat is it is a point cloud of radiance fields. And so, of course, the complexity of the scene increases the complexity of the render and the data size and all of that kind of stuff. And so, because those are big scenes, you like travel all the way around through them, and you can actually walk. You don't have to just teleport. And there are multiple rooms that they've captured in each one of those. So it's a huge data set. And I think it would be tough to kind of render it out. But also, too, the problem is, like, at those huge resolutions, it looks pretty good, but then you want to see something up close, you know, you can start seeing some resolution loss. What's really interesting about taking this more object-oriented approach, of course, it's more compact, but you can also get much more, like, pixel density. And so things look sharper, and it really has that, like, for me, hitting that lizard brain of making it feel like it's actually in front of you and it's the object, and you get closer to it, and, you know, if it's at scale, it doesn't lose resolution. Like, that's a huge, huge win in terms of convincing you that you're no longer staring at a screen, but you're actually staring at the object. But it does scale up. I showed you some examples of food. I love food photography, and so I take a lot of food scans. But they also have stuff that's more like, you know, human people scale and all that kind of stuff too. And so you can see different examples, and it scales out pretty well depending on what you want to capture. But of course, the more complex the scene, the less they can do. But what's really cool though is, you know, if this is the JPEG, they're also working on the MPEG of VR. And so they have a 4D Gaussian splat demo that I've seen, and it's very impressive. And what's interesting too, like, you know, there's been volumetric video in the past and there's been photogrammetry, but there's always been kind of drawbacks. They've never had photorealistic visual fidelity. And that's, you know, just the nature of meshing, the nature of having to play it back in a 3D engine. And so here, because it's actually playing back the photo data, again, it's like an AI that trains on the data set to give you the new novel views. So it's completely smooth when you look at it. It takes 50 images and then gives you infinite angles of resolution, essentially. And that's really the power of what makes, like, radiance fields, nerfs, Gaussian splats, all of that family really, really unique. But then what's really impressive with Gaussian splats is really efficient to play back on more like standard devices.
And how large of a file does it take to, because imagine that you have to do some processing, and then, so it sounds like it might be being processed offline on like a high-end GPU, but then put onto some sort of format that then you're able to play back in a much more compressed format. So how big are the files that you're showing me, like one of them?
Yeah, so like the data set I have, like, you know, I go to a restaurant, I take pictures anywhere from like 50 to like 100 photos. It takes me like 4 minutes to capture. And then that ends up being like about 150, 200 megs of data. And then I process that in the cloud. And then I get back this file format that's roughly about 30 megs. Like, and then, or it's actually about 200 megs. But then once I remove the background, so like, and make it just object focused, then it becomes about like 20 to 50 megs.
Okay. And then you were talking about in the second splat that you're showing me, there was like tomatoes and some translucence. And so how do you describe some of the unique affordances of how the Gaussian splats are different than what you see with like the photogrammetry with texture, like, you know, more static meshes?
So this is what's really, really impressive about the Gaussian splat, right? Like I mentioned, it was like a point cloud of radiance fields. And a radiance field, instead of being just one single color value, like a voxel, the radiance field is giving you essentially a sprite that understands what angle you're looking at it and gives you the right image set for that angle. And so what ends up happening is it can capture all of the like view-dependent lighting. It can capture translucency, transparency, reflections, specular lighting, any kind of lighting, really. And so that's why it just captures all of the photographic data and displays it back at the right angle. And so you can't do things, at least without a lot of AI processing, like relighting, but you naturally get everything that's proper about the scene.
So what are the use cases that you see in terms of where this goes from here?
Yeah. Like I like to tell people, like, this just, again, opens up more possibilities for content that have never really been possible before in XR in this compelling of a way. And so things like fashion, things like beauty, I mean, even like, you know, things like food, tourism, all these other like use cases where, again, the synthetic 3D rendered scene, like in Unity or Unreal, could look pretty good, but you still know you're looking at game assets, game data. You know you're not really looking at a photo of the real thing. And so now all of these other use cases are possible. Like if we think back about, like, you know, the way that computer graphics started, it first started out with vectors. And it took a long time until we got bitmap graphics and JPEGs. And it's like once we got JPEGs, oh my God, it opened up so many other industries. And I think that's why we're at that point now with VR.
Nice. And so there's basically these objects in these black voids, and, you know, it makes me think about how, well, this could be like a mixed reality, so you could use the camera of the rest of the scene. I don't know if that would be too heavy for it to process the mixed reality components, or, you know, just in talking to the developers of Starship Home, they were really emphasizing that photoreal objects don't really work that well with mixed reality a lot of time, and so they went with, at least for their game and their context, more of a cartoony art style that makes it more distinct for what objects are physical versus which ones are virtual. So, yeah, I'm just wondering if something like this has been experimented with, having some sort of like mixed reality use case where you set a spot on your table and you can click through different objects but still have the rest of the scene that's just the world around you rather than being in a big black void.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially set up for those AR use cases, and I've seen some tests of it and it looks phenomenal. I think like the interesting things about it too is like there can be a mismatch of the lighting, right? But you know, you can rotate the object to approximate what the lighting in your area is, and then it kind of locks it in a way that is very compelling. And I think, you know, the test for AR used to be there's three objects on this table, which is the virtual one, right? Like that used to be, and the Gaussians thought you would not be able to tell 9 times out of 10, unless you're like a hardcore photographer that understands the way lighting looks and the way like lighting behaves. But for the layperson, I think, yeah, they probably wouldn't be able to guess.
Great. So yeah, as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on like MetaConnect, and what are the big takeaways that you have from the different announcements or just some of the buzz that you're hearing right now in the XR industry?
Well, I want to get to that, but real quick, I just want to plug the guys. I mean, they're doing amazing work. I think I want everyone to see this. Tell me what you think of my food scans. So go to the Meta Store and download Gracia, G-R-A-C-I-A, VR, and check it out for yourself. Because I think it's hard to describe. It's hard to even show like a 2D image of what they're doing. You have to experience it in the headset, but that's how you know it's the best XR. So in terms of what I thought about MetaConnect, I mean, honestly, this was amazing. I think they nailed the keynote. I think they showed strength in all of their current activities, right? Like I think the MetaQuest 3S hitting that magical price point, having a spectacular, amazing game like that, not just is a great IP and looks good, but actually plays great. I think that's going to be huge for the industry, especially right now where there's no new consoles in sight. So what's going to be the most interesting thing for Christmas? It's not going to be a PlayStation 5 Pro. Like, I think playing Batman on the Quest 3, or more likely also playing Gorilla Tag on the Quest 3, will be way more compelling for most people out there. But then also really big on just the Meta Ray-Ban collaboration. It's really working. I mean, I wear a pair. I like them a lot. But what's really interesting to show all the other use cases of it, and that they're thinking, you know, beyond just taking photos and doing really some interesting things. I think this is like the Trojan horse of like consumer AI. I think a lot of times people are like, what is there going to be a consumer AI device? And of course, you know, Jonathan Ive and Sam Altman are working on some crazy thing with OpenAI to create what they think could be the iPhone of AI. But honestly, it's going to be glasses form factor. You want the AI to see what you're looking at. And I think Meta has an amazing head start. Form factor, it looks good. And the functionality, like the translation, the memory things of like keeping track of where you parked, or even like maybe where you like lost your keys and helping you find your keys. Like that's huge, right? But most important, of course, is their vision of the near future and showing Orion. And I was really hoping that they would show something. But what they showed was way more impressive than what I thought was currently possible. And so the fact that it's a functioning prototype and not just some vaporware thing, and unfortunately, I'm not cool enough to have tried it. But
I'm not either, yeah.
But we have lots of mutual friends that have, that are very harsh critics and would tell us if it wasn't. And they were like, no, it was. And so I think they really threw down the gauntlet to Apple to be like, hey, you know, like, yeah, we have not been just working on the Quest. Like, and telling everyone, right? Like, everyone always makes fun of, oh, they spent $10 billion for what? And it's like, well, first off, they've created a whole new app store ecosystem. Developers are making hundreds of millions of dollars. But they have also created something as super compelling as the Orion.
Yeah, you mentioned the Gorilla Tag. There was lots of leaks of the Quest 3S, and Walmart had a store. And there's someone on Twitter who said, you know, because they were promoting Batman, and they're like, what they should be promoting is Gorilla Tag, because that seems like it's a real system seller. So it does feel like I played the Batman, but I still feel like there's a certain amount of, like, these AAA games that are interesting and compelling, but I don't know if it'll be one that actually cracks through with, there's some nice embodied gameplay with the punching mechanics and stuff, but still, like, I don't know, there's something around, like, what's happening with Gorilla Tag with Carousel and the rest of all Axiom games that it feels like they're on to, like, a completely new paradigm of some of the different interaction that this type of, like, hand-based locomotion seems to be really taking off. And it makes me wonder, like, if there's something around, like, folks at Meta who are trying to curate and decide what is or is not going to be on the store, or with the critics of XR, and then there's the users who are, like, finding these kind of word-of-mouth, grassroots-grown communities like I Am Cat and Gorilla Tag, or just stuff that feels like maybe not on the radar of the larger discussions within the XR industry. So it makes me wonder as to, like, how much of this gap between what's happening and the grassroots of actual users that are using it versus, like, some of these big marketing pushes when there could be stuff that's actually being system sellers that are not being a part of these campaigns. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts as someone who is watching the industry very closely.
That is a fantastic question. I feel like we could fill a whole, like, hour just on that. But what I will say is this. Like, honestly, I've never been a huge fan of IP, like, big IP. And I've always been like, okay, really great VR-first gameplay. That makes the biggest difference, right? But fundamentally, I also think, too, like, there's this wish fulfillment factor in VR. And are you telling me that when you glide down the cape and then you look at your shadow and you see the bat shadow, that you don't feel like that inner kid in you doesn't just sing and say, hell yeah?
Yeah, the bat shadow was probably the most cool things of the whole demo, was seeing my shadow and knowing who I was, yeah.
I mean,
But the whole, it's still stick-based locomotion, it's still, like, not comfortable, but yeah.
Going back. But again, just because it's stick-based locomotion doesn't mean it's not selling. Like, Bone Lab and Blade and Sorcery are killing it, are still doing great. Like, I don't think it's an either-or necessarily, right? Where you're like, okay, you know what? Like, what they need to get is all types of players. And I would say, like, Gorilla Tag, definitely, they should be promoting more, and they have been in certain ways, but also Gorilla Tag kind of sells itself because kids tell other kids, and they get them, and that's really important. But there's also a segment of traditional gamers that are looking for something more, and so it's like they need to expand across all categories. And, of course, I want them to do, you know, everything, but limited resources, you can't do all. But I will say, like, I feel like this is one of the first times I felt like one of the big AAA IP kind of things actually plays really well in VR and feels VR, it feels embodied. You know, they have kind of Beat Saber-y kind of, like, rhythm combat that feels fun, but it still, like, honors, like, the Arkham kind of combat system. So I don't know, like, is it the perfect game? No. But it's an excellent fun game that uses the IP in a very, like, true way and lets you live out your Batman fantasies. Heck yeah. And so, yeah, I'm all in for it because it felt great. And it wasn't, like, to me, I feel like a great VR game has gestural combat, like, or gestural, like, embodied gameplay. And I feel like they deliver on that. Wish fulfillment. Like, I feel like, yeah, this is the best kind of superhero simulator I've played. Like, throwing a batarang, using a grappling hook, all felt just great. Gliding felt great. And then the combat was just, it was fun. Was it like the most physics? No, but was it great embodied gameplay? Yes. Like, also, too, when you did the ground and pound, wasn't that pretty satisfying? I see you smiling.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a little, like, I guess I don't play a lot of games, and so it was fun. Maybe I'll play through it. I don't know. I enjoyed the world building and other things, but I feel like I played through Riven. I don't know if you've played through Riven, but it's a little bit less hand-holdy, and there's a little bit more of, like, the open world exploration where you can get lost, and I feel like this was, like, very prescriptive of, like, okay, pull this lever to proceed, and now go here and do this, and it was like,
well,
so it's like...
We played a demo. Yeah. So we played a very scripted demo, but I think the bigger thing, too, is, like, what I think this is a great introductory VR game for a lot of new adopters. Yes. And I think that's also the thing, too, where it's like, would I recommend Gorilla Tag for most people's first VR experience? No. Right? So if you're asking me, like, yeah, like, that's, I think, more about this. I'm like, I love what they're doing. I think it's amazing. But, like, when I tell people, hey, put on a headset and try the first thing you should try, like, I would feel very comfortable saying, you know, Batman. But of course, I'd still probably recommend Beat Saber. But it's important to have lots of different options for lots of different types, right? And also things that are comfortable, like do all of these things. And I felt like it was a very like rich experience that was not like nausea inducing, not like, you know, high levels of comfort, but still you got to do amazing things and feel pretty good. So I think they nailed a lot of things that, for me, I totally understand why they should push this as a first game. But anyways.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. History has shown that the AAA translations have rarely kind of like...
Because they were garbage. They all played terrible. But what's really great, too, like, I mean, you know, they acquired the studio Camouflage. They did a great job with the Iron Man game. So, like, this is not their first VR game, right? Like, and not even their first good VR game, right? And so that means a lot. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all to be determined. I think the price point, more than anything else, is going to drive a lot of the headsets. And it's nice to have something that's equivalent to Quest. For me personally, there's different things with like IPD and comfort and lenses and no headphone jack. And so there's like little things like that that, you know, for me, the Quest 3 is still going to be the preferred device. But for people that are looking for budget-friendly devices as an entry point, I think it's going to be a real catalyst for bringing more and more mixed reality content out into the ecosystem. So that'll be exciting.
That's actually the bigger question. Like, it's interesting that their flagship game is not a mixed reality game, right? If this is the device that will bring mixed reality to the forefront. But I will say, too, like, Spatial Ops, I don't know if you got to try it.
But I heard about Resolution Games that happened last night.
Yeah, and like, you know, one of the cool things about it, you know, they were showing off kind of like multi-room interaction and just, again, your whole, not just one room, your whole house or apartment becomes the battlefield, and it's just nuts. Like, they really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I saw lots of people playing it ahead of time, and I just saw you walking with Tommy Palm and Resolution Games. So, yeah, it sounds like that's one of those co-op games where you essentially transform your house into a laser tag type of game, but then, yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. So did you get a chance to play it?
So I haven't played the full experience. I played like bits and pieces as they've been developing. And I'm not an investor. I'm just a friend. But like talking to them, seeing the demos, seeing other people's reactions, unfortunately, the line was too long for me. And you know, I feel awful if I try to cut. So I'm like, but yeah, the reactions have been phenomenal. And I can't wait to try it.
Yeah, they had a happy hour yesterday for people to come try it out. And also WaveXR had a whole event where they were showing their latest demo. So yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think the ultimate potential of XR spatial computing might be and what it might be able to enable.
So I've often thought like the ultimate killer app is really the HoloLens, a multiplayer HoloLens, right? Like that's really the dream, you know, for us like Star Trek nerds. And I used to think, man, like it's just so expensive to build. And it's like, okay, if you give a team like Rockstar $1 billion budget, 10 years and 1,000, probably 2,000 employees, they can build a city. And a very impressive, like, 10-hour or 40-hour narrative story. But now with the rise of LLMs, we realize, oh, my gosh, we're going to do this much faster. Or there's going to be much quicker ways to do this. There's a kind of a clear line of sight to how this can be accomplished in a much more efficient way. And what's really interesting, too, is, like, you know, one of the biggest challenges is text to 3D and 3D data generation from generative AI. But I'd argue it's because the data sets are not good enough. Garbage in, garbage out. And this is why Gaussian splats are so important. Now we've never had a way to create high fidelity, high quality 3D data sets as efficiently and inexpensive as Gaussian splat and radiance fields in general. And so now we can train LLMs based off these huge data sets, and now it can generate 3D data that looks as good as what I showed you and what you can see in the Gracia app. And oh my gosh, yeah, like that combined with the LLM characters of like in-world. And yeah, we have all the components ready to go to make a holodeck that wouldn't cost $1 billion.
Nice. And is there anything else that's left inside? Any final thoughts you have for the rest of the immersive community?
You know, I've been doing this for 10 years. You know, you and I, you know, we've had many of these discussions over the years. And it's never been more amazing, more exciting. I feel like everything that we've dreamed about is like now more like either in our hands or on the cusp. Like, I still can't believe the quality of devices that we get access to and the qualities of experience that we get to play, and the fact too that now we're seeing so much innovation and creativity, and we're seeing things that are not obvious. Like, I think Gorilla Tag, no one had that as a thought of this is what's going to be the big thing in XR, and to know that all of that is happening just makes this so exciting. And I'm so glad that I'm a part of this and I get to support amazing founders. And you know, if you're working on stuff and you need support, reach out to me or my partner Marco. I'm tipitat at thevrfund.com, or you can find me on X. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dipitat. It's always great to hear your latest thoughts. And yeah, you had such enthusiasm for Gaussian splats, and I could see not only the experience is compelling, but also this larger implication for using it to train AI and this kind of generative AI and how to create these photorealistic scenes with data sets that were now capable of not only capturing all these different Gaussian splats, but then using them to generate even more imaginal worlds of our dreams and things that don't even exist in physical reality, but or mashing and melding of things together. That I think that's like a sweet spot of taking these different archetypal forms and like smashing them together and creating stuff that just doesn't exist in reality. So there's this kind of dreamlike visions that look real, but just don't exist in physical reality. But we can live into our dreams of VR and XR and AR and all the things, all the R's. So yeah, thanks again for joining me to help share a little bit more about your thoughts here on MetaConnect, but also where you see it all going in here in the future.
Thank you for having me. And thank you again for doing what you do, man. And yeah, it's what I like to, especially at MetaConnect, is we're just seeing so many friends that now decade-long friendships, and it's incredible. Like, I think, you know, backing that Kickstarter changed my life. And I know XR is going to change a lot more people's lives for the better, and I'm excited to try to help.
Thanks again for listening to the Voices of VR podcast, and I would like to invite you to join me on my Patreon. I've been doing the Voices of VR for over 10 years, and it's always been a little bit more of like a weird art project. I think of myself as like a knowledge artist, so I'm much more of an artist than a business person. But at the end of the day, I need to make this more of a sustainable venture. Just $5 or $10 a month would make a really big difference. I'm trying to reach $2,000 a month or $3,000 a month. Right now, I'm at $1,000 a month, which means that's my primary income, and I just need to get it to a sustainable level just to even continue this oral history art project that I've been doing for the last decade. And if you find value in it, then please do consider joining me on the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.